Hey everyone, and welcome back. Today we're going to be doing a deep dive into the world of digital forensics and open source intelligence. You might know that as OSINT.
Yeah, and it's a pretty relevant topic these days. Everything's online.
I mean, every click, every post,
your email,
everything is online.
Yeah.
So we need folks who are able to go in and figure out what happened if there's something suspicious going on.
Exactly.
So we got this great article today by Krishna Kumar Mahadevan.
MKK.
MKK.
That's right, yeah.
And he's a real pro in this space.
Yeah, he's got tons of experience, almost 100 consulting projects under his belt.
So he knows what he's talking about. Yeah. And this is going to be the first of a three-part series.
Yeah.
Kind of digging into the field.
This is just the groundwork.
Yeah.
We're going to get into the nitty-gritty in future episodes.
So let's start by setting the scene here.
Okay.
Right. Imagine a company has had a major data breach. Someone stole a bunch of sensitive information. Mm-hmm. They have no idea who did it.
Right.
This is where the digital forensics comes in.
Right. They're like the detectives.
Like the digital detectives.
Showing up at a crime scene.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So just like at a normal crime scene, they got to follow the rules.
Yeah.
Like Locard's exchange principle.
Oh, yeah. Locard's exchange principle, one of the fundamentals. It basically states that every contact leaves a trace.
So, like, think about it. If someone breaks into your house, they're going to leave behind fingerprints.
Right.
Footprints, hair. Something.
Exactly. You can't not leave something.
Yeah. And so in the digital world, we're talking like IP addresses,
right,
timestamps, and log files.
Uh-huh.
Even deleted files sometimes.
Oh, right. Even if you think you wiped it clean.
And so no matter how careful the cyber criminal is, they leave these traces behind.
Always. Yep.
And so it's the digital forensic expert's job to go find them.
Exactly. They're the ones that got to put it all together.
Okay, so we've got our digital crime scene. We've got our digital clues.
Mm-hmm.
But before we start looking for those digital fingerprints,
yeah,
we got to talk about the rules of the game.
Of course. Always got to follow the rules.
Right.
Especially in court.
Especially if we're going to bring this evidence to court.
Right.
We want to catch the bad guys.
Absolutely, yeah.
So let's talk law.
Okay.
So MKK, he lays out some key U.S. laws in his article. Like there's 18 U.S.C. section 2029 that covers computer-related fraud.
Right.
Like identity theft. And then there's the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, the CFAA.
Yeah.
That covers hacking and denial of service attacks.
Yes, all that malicious stuff.
Yeah. And then there's the Electronic Communications Privacy Act.
ECPA.
Or the ECPA.
Yeah.
And this one's important because it governs electronic surveillance.
Right. You can't just snoop on anyone you want, even if it's on your own company's network. Gotta have authorization.
Yeah. Everyone has a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Exactly.
Even in the digital world.
Uh-huh.
So, you know.
Kind of like you need a warrant to search someone's house.
Yeah, like you just can't barge in.
Exactly.
And start looking at their stuff.
Yep.
So that's just kind of scratching the surface here of the legal stuff that's involved with digital forensics.
Right. Digital forensic investigators need to know this stuff inside and out.
Okay.
Make sure they're doing things legally and ethically.
So we've got our legal foundation now.
Okay.
Let's get back to the evidence.
Yeah.
MKK goes into the rules of evidence.
Right.
And I'm not going to lie, it was a little intimidating at first.
Oh, yeah.
But
it's a lot to take in.
Yeah. I think I'm starting to get it now.
Good. Good.
It's just like a game.
Yeah.
With rules that everyone has to follow.
Right. Keeps things fair and reliable. That's how you get justice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So MKK mentions Rule 402.
Oh, okay.
Which is all about relevant evidence.
Makes sense, right? Whatever you bring the court has to actually be related to the case.
Yeah, it can't just be random information.
Right.
It has to actually help prove something.
Exactly.
Okay. And there's Rule 502.
502.
Which is all about protecting the conversations between a lawyer and their client.
Oh, yeah. Attorney-client privilege.
Right.
Super important. What they talk about is confidential.
Yeah.
Can't use that in court.
So builds trust.
Right.
Clients can be more open.
Exactly.
Okay. And then Rule 702 is about expert witnesses.
Yeah.
Imagine you're the digital forensic expert who cracked the case, and now you got to go to court.
Right.
And explain all this technical stuff to a judge and jury.
Exactly. You're the expert witness. You got to break it down for them.
Wow. Pressure.
Right.
And then there's this thing called hashing.
Hashing, yeah.
That's part of Rule 902.
Okay.
Self-authenticating evidence.
So basically think of it like a digital fingerprint for a file.
Okay.
You create this unique code based on what's in the file. And if even one tiny bit of that file changes, the hash value is going to be different.
So that's like a way to prove the evidence hasn't been messed with.
Exactly. helps ensure the chain of custody.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yep.
And then there's this thing called the best evidence rule.
Right. It's all about using original evidence whenever possible.
But with digital stuff,
yeah,
you can't really bring a whole server into a courtroom.
Right. You can't exactly do that. That's where Rule 1002 comes in.
Okay.
It says that in a lot of cases, a forensically sound copy of the evidence is okay to use.
Oh, okay. So it's not like just a...
It's not just a control C, control V.
Right.
No, no.
There's a whole process.
Yeah, there are special procedures you got to follow.
Gotcha. Okay, so we've talked about the legal groundwork.
Right.
The rules of evidence.
Uh-huh.
Now let's get into the process of a digital forensic investigation.
Okay.
MKK outlines this framework.
Yeah.
The DFRWS framework.
It sounds complicated, but it's just breaking down the investigation into clear steps.
Okay, I like it. Nice and organized.
Right, like a recipe.
All right, so what's the first ingredient in our recipe?
First step is identification. Figure out where the evidence might be. We're talking log files, system files, internet history.
Even those temporary files.
Yeah, you never know.
So you're looking for anything that might tell you what happened.
Right. Who was involved, how they did it, the whole story.
Okay, and once you've found your potential sources of evidence, then what?
Then comes preservation. Got to make sure that evidence is protected. Can't have it accidentally modified or deleted.
Like it's super fragile or something.
Pretty much.
Like you could just sneeze on it and it would disappear.
You're not wrong.
Okay, so we've identified it. We've preserved it.
Yeah.
What's next?
Collection. This part can be pretty time sensitive.
Okay.
Especially when you're dealing with volatile data.
Volatile data? What is that?
Okay, so imagine you're looking at a computer that's still running.
Okay.
The stuff in its RAM. It's like the computer's short-term memory.
Okay.
That's constantly changing.
Oh.
And if you shut down the computer, it's gone.
Oh, wow. So it's like a race against time.
Exactly. Got to capture that volatile data first before it disappears.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah, can be.
Okay, so let's say we've collected all of our evidence.
Okay.
Do we just start clicking through files?
No. We have to do a proper examination.
Okay.
Use special tools and techniques to get the data out.
So this is where things get really interesting.
This is where it gets fun. You can use forensic software to get deleted files, analyze internet history, extract emails. It's like having a digital microscope.
Ooh, that does sound fun.
It is.
Okay, so once you've got all the data extracted.
Yep.
What happens?
Then comes the analysis, the real detective work.
Okay, so this is where we're figuring out who did what.
Exactly.
When they did it.
Okay.
And why.
You got it. Looking at timestamps, IP addresses, user activity logs, all that stuff.
Trying to connect the dots.
Exactly. Looking for patterns and connections that point to the bad guy.
Like putting together a big jigsaw puzzle.
Right. Except the pieces are spread out all over the place.
All over the internet.
Hard drive servers. Everywhere.
Okay, and then the last step.
Presentation.
This is where investigators document what they found.
Right, gotta write those reports.
They might even have to go to court and testify.
Exactly. Gotta present the findings in a way that makes sense.
So it's not just about finding the evidence.
Right.
It's about being able to explain it in a way that holds up in court.
Exactly.
Okay, but what about cases where the evidence is encrypted? Like, that just seems like a dead end.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But there are ways to break encryption. It all depends on how strong it is.
Okay.
Sometimes you get lucky and the criminal messed up somewhere.
Oh, like they wrote down their password.
Exactly.
Or maybe they made a mistake in the code.
Sometimes, yeah. It's a constant battle.
Wow. It's making me nervous about my own digital footprint.
Right. Makes you think twice about what you do online.
Yeah. What can we do to protect ourselves?
That's a good question, and we'll definitely get into that more later on in the series. But for now, just be mindful.
Okay.
Think before you click. Use strong passwords and two-factor authentication.
Okay, good advice. So now I'm kind of curious about the tools that digital forensic investigators use.
Oh, yeah. They've got some pretty cool gadgets and software.
Like what?
Specialized software that can recover deleted files, analyze internet history, even crack passwords.
And what about hardware?
Forensic workstations, write blockers, even portable kits for when they have to go out in the field.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
This is so interesting. I can't wait to learn more. But I think that's a good place to stop for now.
We'll be back with part two, where we dig deeper into the world of OSINT and how it's used to solve these digital mysteries.
Welcome back to the deep dive.
All right. So last time we were talking about all the laws,
yeah.
the rules of evidence, and all that fun stuff.
The groundwork.
Yeah, the groundwork. But now I want to learn more about this OSINT thing.
Oh, yeah. Open source intelligence.
Yeah, OSINT. It sounds so like spy movie.
I know, right? Because honestly, we all use OSINT every day, probably.
Really?
Without even knowing it. Like how?
Think about the last time you Googled something. A recipe or directions, maybe even looked up someone on a dating app.
Oh, yeah.
That's OSINT. You're just gathering information from public sources.
Okay. Yeah, I guess so. So how does that apply to like digital forensics?
Okay. So let's go back to that data breach we talked about.
Okay.
You've got some clues from the compromised system, maybe an IP address or username.
Uh-huh.
Now you can use OSINT to like connect those to the real world.
So I could take that username and see if they're on social media.
Exactly. Or like forums or message boards, even online gaming.
Oh, okay.
You might find photos, locations, posts.
So you could actually find the person.
Right. And now it's not just some random username. It's an actual person.
It's like those crime shows where they zoom in and enhance and suddenly they know everything.
I know, right? It's kind of like that.
That's cool. And this is all legal?
Yep. Totally legal. And ethical.
Yeah.
We're not hacking into anything.
Okay, good.
It's all public information.
So it's like you're a detective, but you don't have to sneak around. It's just using Google.
Pretty much, yeah.
So what are some examples of how OSINT is used to solve cases?
Okay, so let's say you're investigating cyber stalking.
Okay.
The victim is getting all these threats.
Uh-huh.
But the sender is using a fake email address.
Okay.
With OSINT, you might be able to trace that email back to like a temporary email service.
Okay.
And see if they log IP addresses.
So you could find out where those messages are coming from.
Potentially, yeah.
Even if they're using a VPN or something.
Maybe, it depends.
Okay, that's cool. What about like for fraud?
Oh yeah, so say someone's selling fake stuff online through a fake website.
Okay.
OSINT can help you find the registration details for that website, payment processors, even customer reviews.
So you could see if there's a pattern.
Right, exactly. Maybe they've done this before.
Wow, so you're not just catching one person. You're catching like a whole network.
Potentially, yeah. OSINT helps you see the bigger picture.
That's crazy.
Yep.
So this OSINT stuff sounds pretty complicated.
Yeah, it's not just about knowing how to use Google.
Right.
You need critical thinking skills, got to be able to analyze information. Connect the dots.
So you're like a detective, a researcher.
Oh, yeah.
A puzzle solver all at the same time.
And you got to be patient.
Okay.
These investigations can take a while.
So you could be looking at a ton of data.
You could, yeah.
And trying to find those little clues.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so I get that it's a really powerful tool, but it seems like it could be misused pretty easily.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Right. Like, what about privacy concerns?
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Even though it's all public, we still have to be careful. Can't just go around spreading misinformation or harassing people.
Right. Just because it's out there doesn't mean you should use it.
Exactly. You have to use the information responsibly and ethically.
So I think I understand the basics of OSINT now.
Okay, good.
But I'm curious about the tools.
The actual tools?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the fun part.
Yeah. Like what kind of software do they use?
Well, they're specialized search engines.
Okay. They're like Google, but way more powerful. They can search the deep web and all sorts of hidden places.
Oh, wow. So you could find people who were trying to hide.
Yeah.
Potentially.
That's pretty cool. What else?
Social media analytics tools.
What are those?
So these let you monitor social media activity. You can see who's talking to who, what they're saying.
So you could track someone's movements?
You could, yeah. See if they're connected to anyone suspicious.
Okay.
It's a lot of information.
Wow. Anything else?
Well, then there's data visualization tools.
Okay.
They can help you make sense of all that data.
Right, because I imagine it's a lot.
Oh, yeah. It can be overwhelming. But these tools can create charts and graphs and maps to make it easier to understand.
So you can see the connections more easily.
Exactly.
Oh, I like that. It's like one of those big conspiracy boards.
Kind of.
With the yarn connecting everything. But it's digital.
Right.
This is all so cool. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's still people doing this work.
Oh, yeah. The tools are great.
Right.
But you need a skilled investigator to use them properly.
So you need someone who understands technology, who can analyze information, and who's just naturally curious.
Exactly. Someone who wants to find the truth.
Well, I'm definitely feeling more informed about digital forensics and OSINT now.
Good, good.
It's crazy how much technology is involved.
I know. It's amazing what we can do these days.
And how much information is out there.
It is a lot.
But I'm kind of still thinking about that question you asked earlier about the unexpected places where you might find digital evidence.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I'm going to have to think about that one. So I think that's a good place to stop for part two.
That's good.
We'll come back and talk about the specific OSINT tools in more detail in part three.
Welcome back to the deep dive. So we've spent the last two parts talking about the ins and outs of digital forensics and OSINT.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground.
All the laws and the rules.
How investigators use public information to solve cases.
Mm.
But now I want to get into the actual tools and techniques. Like, how do they actually do this stuff?
Okay, so one of the most basic techniques is disk imaging.
Disk imaging? What's that?
Basically, you're creating an exact copy of a hard drive or other storage device.
Okay.
It's like a clone.
Okay. So even if someone deletes stuff?
You can still get it back.
You can still find it.
A lot of times, yeah, because when you delete a file, it's not actually gone.
Oh.
The operating system just marks that space as available.
Okay.
But with the right tools, you can usually recover those files.
Even if they've been overwritten?
Sometimes, yeah. It depends on how much they've been overwritten.
So it's like a race against time.
Pretty much.
To preserve that data.
Exactly. And that's why you need special software.
Like what kind of software?
Oh, there's a bunch of them out there. Autopsy, InCase, FTK.
Okay. And what do those do?
They let investigators analyze disk images, search for files, recover deleted data. They can even put together fragments of files.
Wow. So it's like putting together a puzzle.
Yeah, kind of.
So that's disk imaging. What about hardware? What kind of hardware do they use?
Well, write blockers are important.
Write blockers? Why do you need those?
So you don't accidentally change the evidence.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right. You don't want to mess up the original data.
Exactly. And then there are forensic workstations.
Okay. Those are like special computers or something.
Yeah, they're built for handling lots of data.
Okay.
They usually have multiple hard drives, really good graphics cards, lots of RAM.
So you can process all that information quickly.
Exactly. And then there's all the tools for OSINT.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that.
That's where things get really interesting.
Okay. So what do OSINT investigators use?
Well, they use special search engines.
Search engines. Like Google.
Yeah, but way more powerful. They can search the deep web, hidden forums, all sorts of places.
So you could find someone who's trying to stay hidden.
Potentially, yeah.
Wow, that's scary. It can be. And then there are social media analytics tools.
Okay. Those sound interesting.
Yeah, so you can use those to track social media activity, see who's talking to who, what they're saying, where they are.
Wow, so you could really build a profile of someone.
You could, yeah.
Just from their social media.
It's amazing how much information is out there.
It is a lot.
And then there are data visualization tools.
Data visualization, like what's that?
So you can use those to create charts and graphs and maps to visualize the data.
So you can see the patterns more easily.
Exactly.
Wow. So it's kind of like those conspiracy theory boards?
Yeah, kind of. But instead of red string, it's all digital.
I like it. But, you know, it's still people doing this work.
Right. Oh, yeah, okay. Absolutely. Tools are great, but you need a skilled investigator to use them.
So you need someone who's good with technology,
uh-huh,
who can think critically, and who's just naturally curious.
Exactly. Someone who wants to find the truth.
Well, I've learned a lot today about digital forensics and OSINT. It's a fascinating field. And a little scary, to be honest.
Yeah, it makes you think twice about what you do online.
Yeah, it does. But it's good to be informed.
Definitely.
Well, that's all the time we have for this deep dive. Thanks for joining us.